Recording in progress.
Okay. The Fat Lady has sung. It's a very depressing year for anyone born in the Bronx. And I'm going to revise my birth certificate. The Yankees are a disgrace to anyone who... My father yet saw Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig. I saw Joe DiMaggio through Rizzuto. Akadayla Mesheba Aretz. Vic Rashi. Ben, you didn't have a better ball player than Vic Rashi for many reasons. And I'm still shaking because in 1948, imagine someone's going to tell me that Lou Boudreau was Jewish. 48, check it out, the Cleveland Indians, not the Guardians, the Indians. And it turns out he was Jewish. It's just beyond comprehension, the assimilation and the tragedy in the Western world. All right, but let's leave that to the computers and the cars and everything we dealt with yesterday. We're coming back here and we're dealing with Reb Meir Shapiro, and you're going to see the success and the heartache, and it will not surprise us that he died so young. But let me begin at the beginning. As far as we were talking about the Daf Yomi, so this has to be a Chabadnik Meir Gurkhov. So he tells me that the Rebbe, the seventh Rebbe we're talking about, that the concept of each chassid completing at least one mesechet a year, and in Lubavitch it turned into Chalukat Hashas, and everyone pledged that he's going to learn one mesechet. And here he sent me a copy. That's the Lubavitcher Rebbe signing up. I don't know if there's a date on it. What year? Yutet Kislev, 1980. And if I'm reading the Rebbe's handwriting correctly, he's signing up Sanhedrin. And I think what comes next is Temura, but I'm not sure. One thing about Gedolei Yisrael, you got to be a Gadol B'Yisrael to read their handwriting. And I can tell you with... my memories come back. I can tell you with the Rav, he wrote a letter to Rabbi Revel from Berlin, a four-page letter. That letter, Rabbi Revel kept like it was his most a precious possession. And I'm working on my doctorate, and every summer, the greatest expert in the world would come from Hebrew U, Moshe Litsky. Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, Mamashet Tzadik, Alamdin, was not married, and he was the greatest expert in the world in deciphering handwriting. He dealt with Rishonim, and he was taught at Harry Fischel was called during the summer. Bernard Drebbel became Harry Fischel during the summer, Harry Fischel graduate school, and he made Panasa between Hebrew U and the graduate school in America. I bring the letter to him. And we're sweating over the handwriting. And here is a little kid from the Bronx, a DiMaggio fan, sitting next to the greatest expert in the world. And Moshe, Professor Litsky, turns to me and says, Mata Hoshev Shanach Rakanachnu Shofer Metashinaim Alanichtavase, and Yecholav Tilchechasher Rabbi Revel, Gam Hayulu Bayot Vitsarot Echlikra Etaktaviad. So I think it's Temura, but I'll stand to any correction. I also want to mention that there's a video on YouTube on Reb Meir Shapiro. It's not a total scholarly video, but it's very nice. It summarizes everything we've been saying. And if anyone wants a link to it, you can contact Yomo. Yomo copied it and kept the information. Now, I just want to mention something cute from Rav Moshe Katz. This is Mark Wiener's friend from Chicago. And he's writing, Rav Hutner once told me a story about a simple Jew. Remember we spoke about a big shtetl and why he chose Lublin last week. And Rav Yitzchak Hutner. I told you a story from Rav Yoshua Hutner. When he came to Warsaw, how he was shocked. So Rav Yitzchak Kutner, who was Moshe Katz's Rosh Hashiva and Chaim Berlin, told me a story about a simple Jew from a small shtetl. He always wondered to himself, Chazal say that Yaakov and Esav made a deal. Yaakov took Olam Haba and Esav Olam Hazeh. How could Esav be such an Olam Hazeh is garnished. To give up Olam Haba for such garnished? One time this Yid had occasion to go to Berlin. He saw a big city and was blown away. He came back home and told his wife, Esav is nishtazana. Esav is not such a na. Okay, so that's what we're talking about. And all right, let me pick up where I left off. I just want to ask David Twesky, who has toned the blood in him, are you using Angel's Bakery or not? Where do you stand? I don't have Hasidic blood in me, but I do have Litvisha blood, and it's compromised by my Mizrahi B'nai Akiva blood, but I'm not using Angels, as long as the controversy, because it hurts the way they speak about Gedolei Yisrael. I mean, a general in the army is one thing, but without Gedolei Yisrael, we wouldn't be sitting here. Who saw to it that the Jews continue all the generations? It's the Gedolei Yisrael. Who replanted Torah after World War II? It's the Gedolei Yisrael. And we bind them to speak. I see there's a sign up. I didn't give the date. And to speak ill of Gedolei Yisrael, we can deal with Berman's bread. And I also mentioned all why you people have to eat only Berman's for an obvious reason. Remain loyal to the name. Abe, who's the president of YU today? You're looking at me with... Oh. Thank God you understand the Rebbe. My dear students, today is Monday, May 8th, 2023. It's like Boma tonight. Am I right or wrong? Everyone is holding their breath to see what will happen. And here is sitting here Yomo, who probably is chayev when he goes back to Meiron to make a bracha shasuli neis b'makom hazeh. With shame umalchut. He's lucky to be alive. He was right there, and he got out a minute before the tragedy took place. Okay. Now, we're going to spend the day, again, I'm dealing with Reb Meir Shapiro, I'm dealing with the groundbreaking, I'm dealing with the dedication. And, again, what I said, if this was a college class, we'd just say, all right, he built the yeshiva. But this is a class for B'nai Torah and people who think. And you'll see the achievement and the Atmos Nefesh. And to me, the Atmos Nefesh is sad because it didn't have to be. But unfortunately, that's the way we Torah Jews are. You follow me, Ben? It hurts. We always have this machloket and I can do better and what are you doing and innovation. Chadash Hashem and Torah. Live and let live. There are 12 Shvatim, and then there's a Shah Klali. Let everyone work on their own and work out what is good for them. That's the key. You may be interested. Sunday, I picked up another Talmud from Lakewood. I mean, he was sent. I know who sent him here. It's someone that I took him out of. I don't want to say what I did, or people will be upset with me, but my teachings took him out of the so-called, quote, Haredi world and planted him in the religious Zionist world. And a very important person, very influential. Okay, now, he chose Lublin, we explained it last week, and he didn't want too big a city, but he didn't want too small a city. The idea was there had to be an attempt to fundraise. And this is what I told you with Lakewood, and I want to add one more footnote. Again, I spoke about this years ago, and I got an email from my dear student, Rabbi Unger, mentioning this, and I should have mentioned it last week, even though I spoke years ago. There's another factor to Lakewood. Lakewood had a so-called modern Orthodox congregation, a modern Orthodox kehila, a big shul. They had a day school. Afterwards, I don't think the day school was yet founded when Rabarin came. I think it comes a little afterwards, but anyone who knows can correct me. And Rabbi Meir Waxman was the Rav in Lakewood. Rabbi Meir Waxman, you should recognize the name. His grandson plays a big role in Shalavim. Rabbi, what's his first name? His son is Rabbi Chaim Waxman, married to Rav Lifshitz's daughter, and their son is what is he in Shalva Mashkiach? He plays a big role.
He runs the American program.
Runs right with the foreign students program, correct? And Rabbi Waxman was a Litvish Talmud Chacham who had Americanized, and he was very helpful to Rav Aaron. In other words, Rav Aaron's coming in, there was a base in the community, a rabbi who knew the whole kehillah. He was pro-Rav Aaron, pro the yeshiva. Rabbi Waxman later goes in Aliyah. He becomes the secretary of the chief rabbinate here, and he's succeeded by Rav Reuven Lvovitz from the Lvovitz family. He too was an RCA rabbi, a so-called, you know, modern Orthodox, to use popular terms. He too was very helpful to Lakewood. So you did have that base that was helping Reb Aaron. And in Lublin, Reb Meir Shapiro had many balabatim. As a matter of fact, the grounds for the yeshiva, where he built the yeshiva, was basically given to him a gift by a Jew, Reb Shmuel Eichenbaum. Now, I mentioned the name. This man gave a gift, the ground that the yeshiva could be built. It was a gift worth, in modern terminology, millions of dollars. What's interesting, where is the Eichenbaum family today? And I throw this out. I hope people are listening can look into it. There were many Eichenbaums in Yeshiva University in their various schools. I wonder if they aren't from this family. I'm talking about Yeshiva College, Reitz, Stern College. There was a poster up once of a girl at Stern College. She was an Eichenbaum, right here in Sherry's office on the foyer leading to Sherry's office, the hallway. And I wonder if that isn't the survivors from this Eichenbaum family. Now, the cornerstone laying, Lag BaOmer. Lag BaOmer, tonight, it's the anniversary. We're talking 1924. In other words, it's 99 years since the corner laying on Lag BaOmer. And here you have the Hasidic overtone. Rev. Meir Shapiro went to the cemetery, and he invited the Rabbanim resting in the Lublin cemetery. You, my great rabbis, the scholars of Lublin who spread Torah in the city, you established yeshiva and had many students. You, my teachers, it is from your light that we are sustained, from your mouths we live. I am here to inform you that I, your servant, Yehuda Meir, the son of Maglia, have decided to restore the crown to its place, and I am inviting you to participate in the laying of the cornerstone for this house of study. And he goes on, Hagdil Torah Ladira. Now, you see, that's very fascinating. Among Hasidim, you'll see the Hasidim before a wedding go to the cemetery and invite the grandparents, the great-grandparents, to participate in the ceremony. You'll even hear, under the chuppah, they'll even mention that the neshamis of the departed are with us. Yes, Yomo?
It's a Zohar
and Pashat Pinchas. Zohar, Pashat Pinchas, that's the source. Credit Yomo, born in Kiev. Colin Slonim, grandparents. This what? Colin Stalin, grandparents, despite the communists. Yes, Morty.
Is there a makar for doing a cornerstone?
Where does it come from? I'll tell you. The Chanukat HaMizbeach, so that gives us the Chanukat of the finish. But I would say it's fundraising. That it came about, it's fundraising. You follow? When you lay the cornerstone, it gives you an attempt, your beginning. There's something to sell. But whether there's do we have a corner, or what do you want to say, Ben? That's what you're interpreting. Evan ma'asu habonim.
But saying that there's a
hashivas. Yeah, no, but Evan Wasabonim in simple pshat means something rejected, that they laughed at you. Who's going to build, you know, you could say in respect to Lakewood.
Rabbarim, I understand, but the point of the pasuk is that even though the builders rejected it, it became the Rosh Pina.
But with the man Shapiro, why don't you just say rejected? I mean, he had followers who were...
My proof text is the second part of the pasuk.
Hayatollah Rosh Pina. But it's a good question. Yeah, and Yomo, what do you say?
Rosh Pina is still on top, and Cornerstone is still on the bottom.
No, but say that, but, yeah, Mori.
In shipbuilding, when they start, they lay the keel. It was a big
Right. No, I understand. My answer to you is, I would think it was picked up from the universal world. It's not something specifically Jewish. But why is it so important, the fundraising? This would why, again, I keep on making the analogy to Rabbi Revel and the cornerstone laying. We have pictures, I published pictures in Revel, and that agitated the whole campaign. It brought in $3 million. That's what Revel built with. All right, it wasn't enough. Later, we'll see, we'll talk about it. You'll see the comparison. Yeah.
I think it's Rabbi Pesach.
Oh, Rabbi Pesach. I was saying, what did I say? Reuven. Oh, you know why I said Rabbi Reuven Lubavitz. The Meir Mashkiach, that's his uncle. Rabbi Pesach Lubavitz. Thank you.
Paul Z.
Right. Do you remember Rabbi Pesach
Lubavitz? Paul Z.
Lubavitz. He was I believe, an older brother to Abe Lubavitz. I think he was the older one. And Abe went into money, did very well. And I owe Abe a great debt of gratitude. He gave me $1 million budget, said you don't have the first million I'm covering. And it's an amazing story. And the first showing of the Lonely Man of Faith was in Boston in his honor. And he said to me, it was the greatest moment of my life. The greatest achievement. Then he sent his daughter and son-in-law, happens to be my student from the 60s, sent them to thank me in person that I brought him into this and took all that money from him. And follow me, thanking me for that. By the way, it cost us over $990,000. And we didn't spare anything. That's why it came out and the level it came out. Of course, we had National Broadcasting Television. They're dealing with documentaries. They worked for us. We hired people from them. Cost a lot, but it was worth it. A sideshow, let me just go into parentheses for one more minute. A sideshow, which no one knows, is Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein. They wanted to cut out the interviews with him because his speech was not clear. And I said, look, you're right from your point of view, but from our point of view, it loses credence if we don't have Rabarin. So you know what the compromise was? Look at the documentary again. When Rabarin speaks, they run a typescript on the screen. So you hear him and you read exactly what he's saying. All right, but Pesach Lubavitz, thank you. Okay. Now, what was unbelievable was the extensive reporting. In other words, you got to remember, newspapers are always looking for stories. They have to fill up. You're going to publish every week 100 different pages. You have to. This attracted tremendous attention, tremendous publicity, and people came from all over. And you had in the Yiddish press, for instance, there were young people from Berlin who came. Kids who evidently were Alsiden and had a relationship to Chassidus, they came. The Jews of Lublin were so excited, the Frumma Jews, the Hasidic Jews, they were overwhelmed. The papers were reporting. See, it created tremendous public interest. But more than that, Jews and Gentiles alike came. And you had a lot of non-Jews, and this is what I've told you. We have to pass it on. You can't teach hatred. Yes, the whole debate between Israel and Poland, it was stupidity, because there were Polish Gentiles who saved Jews and risked their lives and gave their lives. The Nazis executed them if they caught them. And there were Polish Gentiles who killed Jews and surrendered them to the Nazis. And this is the reality. It was the Poles, the Ukrainians, the Lithuanians, the Latvians. The only exception did not kill Jews, the Russians. See, that's an amazing thing. And that's my vote from Mrs. Hutner, from my dear neighbor, Batsheva Hutner, Zichrona Levracha. So Batsheva said, how could it be that Russia became such a world power that when Chaim was growing up, his parents were shaking? Russia, world power. What the hell was Russia? Agonis, she grew up there. It was Potemkin's village. It was the biggest farce in the world. When I worked in Russia, Soviet Russia, 90% of Soviet Union was off limits to tourists. Are you aware of that? You know why? They didn't want you to see the truth. I still remember Minsk. I was seeking out the shul in the morning. I had to say Kaddish. It was the year of Avelut for my father. But it's not just for that. When I left to go to Russia, I called my brother. I said to my brother, I may miss days of Kaddish. You keep it going. Turned out I didn't miss any day of Kaddish. Because even where I could make a minyan, where I taught, I said the Devar Torah afterwards and Baruch Hu and the Kaddish, Kaddish the Rabbanan, basically. So I'm looking for the shul in Minsk. I knew where to find it. You know, we had maps, everything. We were drilled, prepared. And you should have seen, it was like going back to 1700. The houses, you couldn't believe, became a world power. And that's where I told them when I came back, this is Minsk, is 1981. So when I came back from Minsk, it was a very moving experience. On the street, I was like a block away from the shul, and I see someone walking to work, and I cooked ice for a yid. So I go over to him, and I say, G'day synagogue. And he looks at me, and tears well up in his eyes, to wild stavenin, yach ich sichtes shul velich davenin. And he showed me exactly where, a block and a half away. It was left in a house. All the shoes were all destroyed. This was just a room in a house that they let them have a shoe. And then after he spoke to me, he ran away like Hasla Chalila. They shouldn't see. He spoke to a tourist. And why was Russia Zalcha? They never killed Jews. Mrs. Hutner, Rebbetzin Hutner, Batsheva, Ziv Soloveitchik Hutner. It's a merit degree. But you see, even Goyim came out to the laying of the cornerstone. And we'll see later with the Chanukah Tabayit the role that the Goyim play. Ohavei Yisrael. Well, you have to always bear that in mind. Same thing with the Arabs. You had on Pesach a Jewish family wandered there, drove into a village, and they started stoning them, and an Arab family came out and rushed them into their home and saved their lives. And later, those Arabs were stoned by their own fellow Arabs. And you had the same thing in 29 in Hebron. So I stand on what I said, and I want to make clear, I guarantee you, my Rebbe in Bnei Akiva, Meir Kahana, would agree with every word I just said. They paid Meir Kahana like he wants to kill everyone. They didn't know Meir. All right, he was a little bit too sharp in public, but he was a good Jew. Torah is Torah. Okay, now, there's another fascinating point, which Charlie, coming from good Yekki background, believe me, you'll have difficulty understanding it. The two main rebbeim there at the laying of the cornerstone and at the dedication 6 years later, the opening of the building, were of course Reb Meir Shapiro's own Rebbe, the Chutkava Rebbe, an Einikel from the Rishona, and the Gerer Rebbe. And as I've told you time and again, without the Gerer Rebbe, he would never have succeeded. He succeeded because the Gerer Rebbe supported him. And the Gerer Rebbe, like in Israel, if the Gerer Rebbe says we're boycotting Angel's Bakery, you're talking tens and tens of thousands of Gerer Chassidim are going to boycott the bakery. The Gerer Rebbe was the biggest in Poland. The Chutkava also was very big, but not as big as Gerer. And Davka Reb Meir Shapiro was a Chutkava Chassid. So when they're ready to put the cornerstone into the ground, and I keep on thinking of YU in upper in Washington Heights, there's the famous picture, the cornerstone with the date on it. They're ready to put it in the ground, and here Reb David Slavin did his research, and he comes up with two versions who did it. But one thing is for sure, it happened. Either the Gerer Rebbe gave the Chutkava gave the Gerer Rebbe two golden coins. And they wrapped them in a cloth and they put it under the cornerstone. And you see, what does this mean? This is Hasidic, that it's a kamiya that you're going to be matzliach. The golden stones are there. You will get to the finished building. All right, I don't know if why you did it uptown, but this is Hasidus. I've had students who had wearing a coin around their neck, wrapped in some paper, an amulet given by a Rebbe. If I would tell this to Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelik, there'd be a hole in the ceiling. But all right, those of you, it works. Yes, Mori.
Going back to shipbuilding, when they lay the keel, they do the same thing. They put a coin down on top of it.
Yeah, they put a coin. So fascinating. So do some research. Let's see who influenced who. But it's fascinating that the golden coin, two golden coins, they said some incantation, and whatever they said, HaKatan Hazeh Gadol Yiyah. You do a Brit Milah. What are you saying over that little kid? HaKatan Hazeh Gadol Yiyah. And believe me, I've seen it with my own eyes. Abe, I only have daughters. God was kind to me. Chaim, do you know why? I've told my students many times. I would have been a nervous wreck if I had sons. What are you doing? But I had endless grandsons and endless great-grandsons. And Imodel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When you grow older, you're smart enough to know. Let each kid find his way. Don't put heat on him. Don't put pressure on him. I have great-grandchildren. I have another Steinsaltz. He plays the violin there. You understand? They already are broad. The kids, imagine. And he's good. They say, he's good with the violin. Where does he get that from? I can't even play a shofar. All right, back here. And then the speeches came, and the Chutkava spoke, the Gerer spoke, and they spoke about Lag BaOmer. Now they made, again, this is Lag BaOmer 99 years ago. They made an analogy, very fascinating. What happens on Lag BaOmer? Why are we allowed to shave tomorrow morning? If anyone says Sfaradi, it's you got to wait Lag BaOmer. But we follow the Ramah Lag BaOmer. You follow me? If the problem is if you have a wedding tonight, but I'm sitting here, I just want to tell the people looking at me, and I want to, when they hear it on YU Torah, most of my Talmidim are sitting here with beards, so they don't even have this problem. But I remember as a kid, you're invited to a wedding, Lag BaOmer night, can you shave? Can't you shave? Oh, you got a real problem. But what happens in Lag BaOmer? No, why do we start shaving? Why do we start getting married? Why do we start celebrating? Why do we start having engagement parties? Because the plague ended. The Talmidim of Rebbe Akiva were dying day by day. plague ended. Ah, Rav Meir Shapiro got up. This is our goal. Assimilation. Bundesism. Socialism. Communism. Secular Zionism. What the Jews were up against. Remember, you've heard my shiur now 50 years on. When I grew up, I had the impression in Europe everyone was a tzaddik. Took me a long time to understand, oh boy, a tzaddik, as the Rav said, after World War I, you were lucky to have Shomer Shabbos Jews left. The communists took over, what went on? America, what went on? And Rav Meir Shapiro said, now with this yeshiva, we're stopping the plague. From this moment on, Torah, respect, learning, returns to Lublin and returns to Poland. All right. And the rest of the talk, you know about, I spoke about it a number of times, I don't want to repeat myself, but the Gemara in Zvachim, Daf Kaf Tet Vav, why do we need such a big display, publicity? Luchot Rishonot were destroyed, but it serves a purpose, to tell the world, we are Jews, we are different. We have Matan Torah. That's the Gemara in Zvachim with Iyov and his friends and Bilam, etc. It's a powerful Gemara. And he says, and it's not just to tell the Goyim, but it's to tell the Jews that Torah is resuscitated. And terrific impact. Now, while all this is going on, there was constant criticism of Rav Meir Shapiro. Number one, we mentioned the Bundes, what ultimately became the communist. Bundes was the Jewish socialist movement. Ultimately, that becomes communism in Russia. Jews, one by one, the Trotsky, Engels, Marx, who lived earlier, but quoted communist system. Even Lenin had a grandfather who was Jewish, as we found out when communism fell. It was mamish certified. Until then, there were rumors. And as I told you, Lenin recorded before his death, that was six tapes or seven tapes, seven different speeches. One of them was against anti-Semitism. And these speeches were redone and recorded and enhanced during the Stalin period. The one in anti-Semitism was never reissued again. But these people, leaflets were distributed against Rav Meir Shapiro. What do we need this for? Waste of money. Old-fashioned. Outdated. Not only that, reporters came from all over the world. Well, here's a beautiful anecdote that captures it. And there was someone from America, could be religious, Yiddish news, there were plenty of Yiddish, all over the United States there were endless Yiddish newspapers. New York alone, there were four or five dailies, I remember it as a kid. One was Shemus Shabbos, the Morgen Journal. The others were printed on Shabbos. And so this reporter from America is overwhelmed. And he was, you know, up Abenun, up front with the newspaper people, like I was in 1980 at the Aguda Convention at the Knesia Gedola in Binyanei Ha'umah. And they asked him, the guy's face, what are you so impressed? Don't you have such beautiful buildings in America? And he answers, no, you're absolutely right. We have even more beautiful buildings. But I'm impressed with the chutzpah of Rav Meir Shapiro that in Poland, with anti-Semitism, with all that's going on in Germany, And with the assimilation among the Jews, the chutzpah to build such a beautiful building, I am impressed. And Rav Meir Shapur responds to him, I learned this from a pasuk, me oyevai techach kemeni, meaning a twist on it, give me the wisdom to outsmart my enemies. Me oyevai, they can build beautiful buildings, they can claim they have the future, I am building, and it is beautiful, and the future is here. Now, one of the great supporters, and this becomes very important as you will see, of Reb Meir Shapiro was Reb Menachem Zember. Reb Menachem Zember, unfortunately, we don't give him the credit that he deserves. He's not that well known. Reb Menachem Zember was probably the greatest Gaon in Poland. He's a Hasidic Yid. He refused for many decades to go into the rabbinate. He had a store where I think he sold metal supplies, screws, nuts, hammers. Had a store in Poland. I believe it was in Warsaw or a suburb of Warsaw. He later perishes in the Warsaw ghetto. And Reb Meir Shapiro was an Ehud. He was a young man yet. But he wasn't a Gaon Adil like Reb Menachem Zember, who was working on the Rambam. They say he had a chibur on almost the entire Mishnah Torah of the Rambam. All that was lost. World War II, the Warsaw Ghetto, the uprising. Reb Meir Shapiro, Shabbos Cholamoid Pesach, 1943, was walking in the street and a bullet shot by the Nazis killed him. And Reb Menachem Zember, he, in addition to the Gera Rebbe and the Chutkava Rebbe, but Reb Menachem Zember put all his prestige behind Reb Meir Shapiro. Why is this so important? Take the Litvish world. The Litvish world, we spoke about this last week and I'll show you more facts later today. They were not happy with what Reb Meir Shapiro was doing. The old problem, funding, money, how much can you get from the same people? I can tell you a story with Yeshiva University. It's a true story, and it brings this to light. Rabbi Joseph Flugstein had the most important congregation. It's still the most important shul, probably outside the state of Israel, Kehilat Jeshurun in the Upper East Side, KJ. And I don't have to tell you, KJ, when you fall, when you're davening in KJ and you're saying Baruch Hu, you're saying Baruch Hu with Jews worth a total amount of billions and billions of dollars, including at one point the president's son-in-law, Jared, and his wife were part of the Kehillah. They now moved to Florida. So what would happen? Rabbi Lichtenstein had a golden tongue, per mapik magoliot. There's a story with Rabbi Aaron Kahn, a young hotshot Rosh Yeshiva at YU. You know, it's a fascinating story. Rabbi Lamb meets the young Rabbi Kahn. He's a graduate, I believe, of Columbia. His speech, his language, his intellectual ability in English. Rabbi Lamb is blown away and says, you have to come and be a Rosh Yeshiva at YU. And he becomes a Rosh Yeshiva. It was not exactly a YU personality of Torah and Mada. Rabbi Lamb was misled by his brilliant command of English. But when he starts teaching, everyone's talking about him. Rabbi Kahn told me this story. So he's invited to speak at KJ. comes to speak at KJ, 5 people show up, 10 people, that's it, nobody there. So Rabbi looks to Mifsum and says, well, I heard you had a small attendance. Tell me, what did you title your talk? And Rabbi Kahn says, well, the intricacies of Bris Torah, of Chaim's analytical mind. Rabbi looks and says, you think you're going to attract people on the Upper East Side with that? So Rabbi Kahn says, what should I have titled it? And he says, Rabbi Luchstein wrote it in the air just like this. He showed me, there is more to Brisk than Lipton's tea. Got it? There is more to Brisk than Lipton's tea. And you see, the Litvisha world, they're looking and they're upset. You're robbing our money. You're taking our money away. Rabbi Zemba's support becomes very important. Of course, there wasn't a Litvisha Talmud Chacham who did not know who Rabbi Menachem Zemba was. And there, if you're a Lubavitcher Chassid, there are legendary stories at the Sheva Brachas with Rabbi Menachem Zemba and the Seventh Rebbe. And you understand, if I would say to the Sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rebbe, du hast gekriegen an Eden, a greise Talmud Chacham. You have a son-in-law, a big Talmud Chacham. No, who the heck is Rav Kefet? So what? You said it to the Rebbe. Rav Menachem Zemba said to the sixth Rebbe, you have a son-in-law, a gon atir. You follow me, Abe? And he plays a very big role in helping Rav Meir Shapiro with all these critiques and all these criticisms. But you have to understand, see, this is the innovation. We Torah Jews, we're hesitant to innovate. It's natural. We know, again, I always, if you remember my lectures that I gave in BMT, 50 years ago, my lectures, Chadash HaSom in the Torah. So I said, you know, a boy comes to me, says, Rebbe, I'd like to consult with you. I'm going out with a girl. She has 3 legs. Should I drop her? I say, let's think about this. You're going out with a girl who has 3 legs. If you drop her, you may get a girl with 2 legs, or you may get a girl with 4 legs, a behemoth. You know what you have. You don't know what you're getting, going to get. You follow me, Morty? And this is the natural reaction. And this was so innovative. His plans are groundbreaking. A big yeshiva. Every type of facility. Modernity. More than that, he came up with a flag. You probably can find that. I imagine someplace on Google you can get the flag in color. And what did the flag show? Yisachar holding up a Torah scroll, and on top of it, a crown is being placed on the Torah scroll by Zvulun. Black and white. You follow? Black and white. The colors of Zvulun, Yisachar, one white, one was black. The flags described in Medrash Rabbah. More than that, what is the flag showing? We have a partnership. We'll provide the great teachers. You provide the support. Now, it's beautiful. When you talk about it, it's inspiring. It's inspiring. On the other hand, who ever heard of flags? Could you imagine? I'm telling her of Noach Bornstein, my Rebbe in my 4th year in high school. Talmud Mufak, anything you read about the Brisker Rav, my greatest Talmud ever. He won in Mir when Reb Lazy Yehuda Finkel announced $50 prize, 1930. You know what, Ben, $50, 1930 today? It's like saying a prize of a chvase, $2,500 in Poland yet. Whoever will learn, they had to have the three bavas, and I believe Yevamot and Kedusha. By this one. 1 year, and then take exam. He got 50. He won. I would tell Reb Noach Bornstein, I loved him. I loved my Rebbeim. I would tell Reb Noach, Rebbe, we have a flag for the yeshiva. He would laugh and he was stopping up and let your head as a zach. And me of Nishka hat. And Radn of Nishka. And Brisk of Nishka. Was he dot up and have a flag? Man can ich lernen in a vota. Man mach aber a flag. Das, yeah? He'd go hysterical. Hit me over the head. And you see, this was the tragedy that you couldn't you want to innovate, people will appreciate it, but others will laugh at you, undermine you, as we will see. Okay, now, finally, 6 years go by, and the building is dedicated. Now, you should know the original dedication was planned for Lag BaOmer, 1929. 6 years after the original dedication, or 7 years, maybe, I believe it's 29. And the building is ready. Everything is ready. Everything is beautiful. Once again, the Chutkava Rebbe, the Gera Rebbe, the Torah world that was there at the ground laying is now there at the opening of the building. It had to be delayed. It couldn't be Lag BaOmer. And I got to tell you, with YU was the same story. The building dedication was planned that the building would open uptown. You've seen the building uptown, so you know it's a Moorish temple. It's unbelievable what they built. And there was what you didn't see. There was gold on top of the building, what do you call it? Tourettes, I think they're called. There was gold originally, real gold. All that was removed.
On the dome thing,
but they're curved. They're like a Moorish temple. And it's built like the Young Israel of Flatbush. It was built at the same time. It's no longer Young Israel of Flatbush, but it was built the same way, but gold. So it was later removed. So what happened was, it was supposed to, what they planned originally, the college would open, the yeshiva would move out to uptown, Elul 1928. The celebration of the Chanukah Tabayat would be December, Chanukah. Chanukah fits in, Chanukah Tabayat. So what happened with YU was, it was not ready, the building wasn't ready. There are always last minute things. It's like you buy an apartment in Israel. If it's a new apartment, there'll always be last minute things. They'll never finish on time. That's the nature of the game. So what they did with YU, you know where yeshiva college began? The yeshiva continued on the Lower East Side, East Broadway. But the college began in Jewish Center. Jewish Center, the big, beautiful building with an elevator, with endless classrooms on the Upper West Side, Rabbi Yangshu. I always, when I last spoke in Jewish Center, I said, you should put a plaque here. Yeshiva College began here, September Elul, 1928. But the Chanukah Tabayat was held in Chanukah, and they all moved uptown for the second term, January 1929. And I had a schut, my neighbor in 18 Berlin, one of the original families, was Rabbi and Mrs. Mendel Lewittis, Ethel and Mendel Lewittis. Their son was my classmate in the Rav Shir, Joel Lewittis. And Rabbi Mendel Lewittis was in the very first Yeshiva College class. Began in 28, graduated 1932. And will come in the Sunday class to a story he told me about his father and Mori Rebbe, my Rebbe, Reb Moshe's son, about his Rebbe, the father of Moshe, and his son, Mori or Rebbe, Reb Yosef Deib Halevi Soloveitchik, but we have to leave that when we hit it in the Sunday class. Okay, now, so they had to delay the opening, simply the building wasn't ready, so it was delayed a few months, and finally the great opening comes. And here's where you're not going to believe your ears. The lock to the building can only be opened with a special key that was made, a golden key. And Reb Meir Shapiro opens the door, honors his Rebbe, the Chutkava Rebbe, the golden key to open the door. Chutkava Rebbe with a golden hammer to put up the mezuzah. You see, Reb Meir Shapiro, he had a feeling he could have been a movie director, a theater director, a Broadway play. He knew how to catch a moment in time. And he stood between the Getter and the Chutkava, and he spoke, I quote him, "It was 6 years ago that I welcomed you in an empty and neglected courtyard. But then I only could give you a promise. Now I am here to bless you from this house of God, from a building which is proudly erected in its place, built beautifully and in my poverty." What he means, in my poverty, in my humility, it's a poor translation of my poverty, but that's the translation I have. "And in my poverty, prepared as a home for God." And this was the opening. Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin is open, is ready. The world has in Poland, for the first time ever, a regular, highly organized yeshiva servicing the entire community, servicing all Hasidim. It's not limited. Abelza learns an Abelza shtibble, Avishnitzer an Avishnitzer shtibble. This is for every Hasid. More than that. And here, you can imagine what he's going through. 10,000 people or more, according to all newspapers. It's not like here in Israel. The left has a demonstration, 1 million attend. The right has a demonstration, 200,000, 100,000. Big crowd. Now, Reb Meir Shapiro speaks. The Gerer Rebbe speaks. Who else should speak? The Chutkava Rebbe, his own Rebbe. Chutkava ran hid in the side room. Can any of you explain this? Who has ever davened in a Rushina shtibble? Davened in Biyana. The Rushina have a tradition. You see, let me make it real. Saturday night we have a minyan in my building. It's Yont Matzoy, Yontep Matzoy, Shabbos, only Matzoy Yom Kippur, we don't have a minyan. And this has gone on, I don't know, 40 years already, 30 years. Parking lot. We have a minyan. Draw from all the buildings around us, a block and a half away, another building. We have a minyan. They opened the minyan afterwards. Baruch Hashem, we don't lack for Jews. So, unfortunately, everyone is gone. My building once had Gedolei Yisrael living in it. Rav Grusnes from London, my neighbor. Rabbi Lewittis, Rabbi Hutner, Rabbi Chill. So I'm left. I once was fortunate. No one knew who I was. No one could believe a guy looks like me, an Oiswafer, who knows what, knows anything, impossible. But over the years, I got some publicity. So Saturday night, the Chazan waits for me to finish Kriyat Shema, waits for me to finish Shmoneh Esrei. I'm not happy. Let me daven at my own pace. Let me not have any pressure on me. If you look into the Mishnah Berurah, the Mishnah Berurah Paskins, Nuchayim, what am I about to say? That you're allowed to motion. Imagine, during davening, you're not allowed to motion, not allowed to talk, not allowed to speak, not allowed to indicate, answer. And if they're waiting for you to finish Shmoneh Esrei and it bothers you, you can motion, go on without me. So, the Rujina, I davened that Biyana. You don't see the Rebbe. There's the men's section, the women's section, and there's a side with a big mechitza, a door, a gate. That's where the Rebbe's davening. If only Abe, you don't look at him. No, that's part. I wonder today, the Biyana Rebbe, the Boyana Rebbe, anyone know if he too, my chaver, I mean, how can I describe him? I've told you so many stories about the Biyana Rebbe and yours truly and his parents and the heartache I caused his gabbai. Not good stories, but you can entitle it, if you want to do a little movie, entitle it The Yetzer Hara Comes to Life in Aaron Rakefitz / Ani Rothkopf. Anyone down here Biyana? I'm curious. I would imagine.
In Square they have.
Also, yeah. They're also from the Rushina dynasty. So the Tchotkova was overwhelmed. 10,000 people. Too much. He couldn't handle it. The Gera Rebbe had to convince him and cajole him, come out and honor your Talmud. Not nice that you're hiding. The Tchotkovers fought the Tchotkover Rebbe. People look up to you. And he got him out. But you can imagine what was going on. And poor Reb Meir Shapiro. One of the other speakers was Reb Aaron Levine. Now, Reb Aaron Levine, this, of course, was quite interesting, and I've mentioned this before. He first of all, he was a Gaon Adir, and he was Shtat Rav in one of the biggest cities in Poland, and he was in the Shem, how do you pronounce it? The Sem, the Polish Parliament, and he also, besides being a Gaon, could speak perfect Polish, and he too spoke, and this too was very important for Reb Meir Shapiro, because these were two individuals who had a deep kinship beyond learning in Gatlet and Torah and Shtat Rabbanim, but Parliament, Agudat Yisrael representatives, Polish speakers. There's a footnote here. Who was Reb Aaron Levine in retrospect? So, of course, Professor Yitzchak Lewin at Bernard Rebbe Graduate School, that was his son. And Yitzchak Lewin's son, Professor Lewin, who was you have no idea, I gained a lot from his courses. He opened up the world of responsive literature to me. By the way, gentlemen, he also was principal of Central Yeshiva High School for Girls. That's Mrs. Panassa. Bernard Rebel Graduate School and principal of Central Yeshiva High School for Women. Reb Yitzchak Levine, it should be, but they pronounced it Lewin. Who is his son? He has it in a footnote. The famous lawyer, Nat Lewin. Nat Lewin is the grandson of the Reisha Rav of the original Reb Aaron Lewin. Now, it could be, I'm skipping a generation, it could be Reb Yitzchak Lewin is a grandson of the Reisha Rav. And Nat, who was a year ahead of me in Yeshiva College, And I have to thank him. He brought me great covet, meaning he really appreciated my work on the Rav. And he told me, and I was told, he took the two volumes, and for 2 years plus, each Shabbos, he gave a talk on one of the insights. And he understood what I did. I have to tell you, my work on the Rav, now, 25 years later, people are starting to understand what I did. But I can't get over it. It's like work comes out. People, I've had two corrections already on the book, and I told you, they're correcting what the Rav said. It's not Rakepit speaking. I only talk in the monograph biography I did. But the rest is word by how I got them, but people don't realize this. Minas Shamayim, read Washington. People think it was all available. I edited it. I made it available to the world many ways over. You'll first see in 50 years from now what I did. But forget that. But he understood. All right. I'm Marke Toivin that. I want you to know. And it's his daughter that's the thing. You see, it all ties together. Nat's daughter grows up in America, and she, and by the way, Nat's brother-in-law, his wife's brother, is a big student of mine from the case. He's corresponded with me already, must be 20 plus years, and I believe he lives on the coast, and he listens to all the Shayorim. So Nat's daughter was raised in Washington, D.C., that area, and we're all exposed to the modern world. And she wants to lay in the Gila on Purim. Yeah, you know about it. You know the story. So she wants to lay in. All right, Chaim, can a woman lay in for women? What do you think? Pretty hard to say no. All right, pretty hard. 98% of the Achronim. But it's innovation. So Matt asked Rabbi Schechter, Rabbi Dr. J.J. Schechter. Rabbi Schechter says, all right, I'll call the Rav, I'll ask the Rav. And J.J. calls the Rav. Pardon me, I know these people, I can't refer to them as Rabbi Dr. Professor J.J. Schechter. Have mercy on me. Okay, I can refer to my students, Rabbi Dr. Lieutenant Colonel Mark Wiener, that's okay, it's my student. But my kids I grew up with. So J.J. calls the Rav, and the Rav says, yes, I know all the sources, etc. Tell me, does Nat Lewin have a big house where he has room to have the group there? And J.J. says, yes. So all right, she can lay in, but only in the living room of her house for the women. That was the Rav's psak. So that's the Lewin family, and La Yehudim Haita O Rav Simcha. Now, the criticisms again continue. Why do we need all this wealth, and why do we need golden keys, and why do we need mezuzah that sparkle, and oh, what was going on? And Rabbi Shapiro is interviewed once again by the Jewish press, and he tells a little story. He says, one day a bacher was eating at a town person's home. He's talking about what went on before when anyone learning yeshiva had to be farmed out, gegessen teg, okay? And they bring over the meal, and the bacher gets up to wash for the bread. Now, let me tell you something. When we were in Russia, Malka would get up to wash for the bread. They were astounded. People couldn't believe women also wash. Others responded, even during the week you wash, not just on Shabbos. You see, this is something that there's wide zilzal in, I saw with my own eyes, from women. During the week, they don't wash. Shabbos, they wash. So when he got up to, and this is Poland, but remember, it's breaking down already. This is after World War I. When he got up to wash, the family laughed at him. They made fun of him. He was embarrassed. Sat back down without washing. However, because he did not wash, he did not eat any bread and remained hungry. No? You see what it means? We're going to have a yeshiva, you're going to wash, you're going to make a motzi. And now remember something. Nowadays, when you sit down to eat, you don't even eat bread during the week. We have so much food, right or wrong. I look into my fridge and everybody says, I'm the shopper, my family. You don't know what it means. You go into these supermarkets, everything is kosher. Rami Levi, Osherad. And what selection? What are you lacking here? All the Israeli salads, we find in. What are you lacking? Mark, all right, so you're lacking licorice with an OU that you...
In the States, if the Baal Bas didn't wash, the bucker wouldn't eat in the house.
That's the Frumkeit of today. But we're talking in Poland, everyone was kosher, the Yasher, the Hulu. Well said, Mark, well said. But that's the Frumkeit of today. And we don't want, who eats bread during the week? I'm a matzah mania, so I have if I want to eat something for supper a little bit more, I take a matzah and put cheese on it, put a little ketchup and spice, put it into the microwave. Wow, matzah pizza, I call it. But this poor kid, you see what happened? He couldn't have bread. What did you eat there? Bread, a shtickle herring, a potato, and you can see, they were overwhelmed. Rob, he totally could defend himself, spoke very well, gave his shir. Chachmei Lublin is on the map. Now there's another side to the coin. He's Rav in Piotrków. He's built the yeshiva in Lublin. It's a fascinating story. The chief rabbi of Lublin was Rebbe Leo Klatskin. I spoke about him in great detail in the Sunday class on one of the most difficult topics you will ever encounter, and it was encountered here in Tzfat a few years ago. It was a get where you're mezaka the get. It's a get that the Beit Din gives that the man did not authorize. And this is an ongoing, tremendous halachic dilemma, because halachically, how can a Beit Din be mezaker a get? It's impossible. You need the ratzon of the man. But sometimes rabbis are overwhelmed by tragedy, and somehow they got 200 Klatskin. He got involved with Zikui Get after World War I. And there, a soldier was going out to battle, and he declared before he goes back to join his unit, he will authorize a get so that in case he doesn't come back, they can have the authorization, the hasha'ar, and the Beit Din can finish up the get. They called him very quickly, come back, we're going out. There was no time to authorize. They never heard from him again. Nobody was found, nobody returned. Okay. So they gave a get on the basis of Eidut from people who said that he said Baal Peh, I want to authorize a get. That's where Rabbi Klatskin became very famous. There was a lot of opposition, but there was support. He was a gaon adir. This came up new. Do you remember, gentlemen, a few years ago in Tzfat, a man, accident, became a vegetable, remained a vegetable, a pure vegetable. My daughter had a case like this. And Rabbi Yosef Paskin, that if he can say Shema Yisrael, you can give the get. he can authorize it. She had a very famous case here. It turned out the man died shortly thereafter, so I didn't have to be samach on this. But these were good, firm people. And my daughter was the Tohenet Rabbani involved. Here, he couldn't say Shema Yisrael. And the Av Beit Din, a graduate of Hebron Yeshiva, they gave a get. A young girl wants to remarry, have children. Okay, I let the issue, Chaim, I don't understand it. There's tragedy in life. We have to live with tragedy. If we didn't have tragedy, we wouldn't daven, we wouldn't be b'tzara. Mima makim karateicha Hashem. The Rav constantly taught me this is our chetah. David, our chetah to daven, because we are constantly b'tzara. But okay, this was quite an issue. Now, Rabbi Klatskin was the rabbi of Lublin. And after all the Sakmas Nefesh with the Getz, you can read about it, there are footnotes here. I have more than footnotes, I actually have a whole sefer. I can't go into detail now because it would take hours, but a chaver of mine from Chaim Berlin, Rabbi Katz, listening in Chicago, Edelman, he was a Chaim Berlin boy. And later he was YU to Chaim Berlin or Chaim Berlin to YU. He wrote a whole sefer advocating being Mazakari get to solve these problems. And Rabbi Klatskin went in Aliyah. Let's see if they have a date here. No, they don't give a date. They just say that he went in Aliyah, which I know he went in Aliyah, and lived in Yerushalayim, and Baruch Hashem, highly respected here, away from the Machloket. No new rabbi was appointed in Lublin. Why? Like the chief rabbinate here, like everything that goes on in every city. By the 20s, there were Aguda, Mizrahi, Bundist, secular Zionists. They ran the city. They ran the Jewish council, the Vod, whatever you had running the city from a Jewish point of view. They could never reach a decision on a rabbi. Now that Yachal opened, some of the wealthy people in town, including Eichenbaum, turned to the city council. Look, you have no choice. Look what Mayor Shapiro has done for the city. Look how he's put it on the map. Look at the publicity he brought us. Look at the tourists who have come. He must be the rabbi. You can't have Yeshivat Yachal and he's not the rabbi of the city. Believe it or not, the Balabatim went along with this. Another person whose role became very big, Reb Leibel Eger, Reb Shlomo Eger, the son of Reb Leibel Eger. And this was Reb Akiva Eger's great-grandson. And that's the one branch of the Eger family with the name Eger that remained from. And I've told you, Reb Akiva Eger's son was Rav anti-Hasidic, 100%. And his son became a Hasidic Rebbe. Became a Hasid first, a Kutzka. And when the Kutzka Rebbe died, there was a split. And part of the Chassidim turned to Reb Leibel Eger to be a Rebbe. His son was a very close chaver of Reb Meir Shapiro. And he carried influence. So Chassidic Rebbe, a bit more open-minded than most, and they succeeded. Alapam v'chamatam for those who were exposed, opposed, they succeeded. He has to be the Rebbe. Now, the building was something special. People came from all over to see it. People were overwhelmed. It captured the imagination. And some of you have been there, and I would imagine today it still makes a beautiful impression. Am I right, Morty? You were there, Charlie? You were there? Who was there? No? You were there, Ben? It's still impressive today. You can imagine at that time when it was dedicated, what a building, what facilities. And here I want to talk about Chaval. We don't have the name, but a Polish woman, non-Jewish, of royal descent. I don't have to tell you what this means, royalty. Shabbos, you all got a taste of royalty, right or wrong? And the Jews, I told you, I couldn't believe it, the Jews in London, in Golders Green, in Hendon, in Stamford Hill, they were upset, they were interviewed. I couldn't believe my ears, from Jews. Upset that the coronation was on Shabbos, that they can't participate, can't turn their TVs on, can't be part of it in real time. This lady, and you can see all the sources, she heard that the yeshiva was looking to landscape the ground leading up to the yeshiva. She donated 100 full-grown trees, provided the experts who could plant them, provided the transportation, 100 trees, ground, experts, all on her cheshbon. And she wrote a beautiful letter. During these terrible times of hatred against Jews emanating from Germany, we want to show that the yeshiva is held in high esteem by us, and we want to do something tangible to show our support. And this was written up, captured in all the newspapers. And that's what I told you an hour ago. You can't teach hatred. See, it's not that I deny, you see, this whole machlokes between Poland and Israel, which Poland says every Pole loved Jews and saved them. Israel says every Pole hated Jews and turned them over to the Gestapo. And the truth will never be like that. Humans are humans. And unfortunately, and this took me a long time to learn, I was very naive, because I've had no value from the age of 11 outside of Torah. Torah is my only value. I mean, people don't realize, all right, I saw the Yankees from Geschmattet Gewernecht, and unbelievable. Cole, 6-0 lead with the top pitcher in baseball, and the Yankees lose 8-7. I mean, what are we talking about? I could pitch better than Jared Cole pitched yesterday. But that, you see, that's not a value. That's an escape from life. All right, the Yomo will tell you when I turn on the TV to the Yankee website, I say, oh, Baruch Hashem, the next 5 minutes I'm a kid in the Bronx again. Ah, it's good for your health, 100%. But not when the Yankees lose, then it becomes aggravating. But you see, it was hard for me to understand. There are people who, what we spoke about yesterday, that Lefapet, that tshuva of Menashe Klein, he hit the nail on the head. There are people who can put on tefillin in the morning and live only to gossip and cause harm. You follow? And look at the harm that individual did. You gotta get them cheaper mezuzah. Idiot, what are you getting involved for? The woman could afford it. It's like Mike telling Elliot, you bought a car, why did you buy such a good car? You could have bought, what's your business? Keep out of it. What did you get? You got a computer. You can get that 5 times better. More this, more that. And yes, there are good people, but they're bad people in life. And you have to know how to maneuver between them. Unfortunately, this is the reality. God created us, gave us free choice. If we didn't have free choice, there's no need for religion. Look into the Rambam, Hilchot Teshuva. And if I would ever be interviewed, I mean, if I would ever get a prize for teaching Torah so many years on such a level in writing, I would love to be interviewed and simply state, we're not here to stop you. You want to drive on Shabbos? You want to eat chaser and Yom Kippur? They're worried. There has to be free choice. This is what religion is all about. Bechira chofshit. Otherwise, there's no Gan Eden and no Gehenna. But on a public level, the state has to be a Jewish state. And that I have a lot to say. If we're not a Jewish state, we're murderers. Who gave us the right to kill any Arab? Who gave us the right to live here, to defend ourselves? We're a Jewish state because this is the land that God gave to our forefathers, Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and all the promises, and by it Rishon, and by it Sheni, and our tzipia, our longing all the years, Shivat Zion, Mashiach Tzidkenu. That's why we're here. That gives us a right to be here. But we're not going to have freedom of choice. Yes, we don't want you to bring chametz into a hospital. Chametz is a symbol in a public thoroughfare. You want to have chametz in your house? Have all the chametz you want. That's between you and God. You follow? And this, we talk about Christians and choice and all, it's part of reality. Good and bad. Accentuate the good. Attempt to influence and lift up the bad. And that woman, and we don't have a name, there's sources all over the place from the papers. They call her a graf, royalty, and which to give with such will and expression, not just the trees, the gardeners, the planters, whatever you need, the upkeep. Hitler is saying what he wants. I want to show something tangible. And that was exactly Reb Meir Shapiro. What he's doing, even Gentiles could appreciate. Jews have come back to life. Now, the building was something special. It had every type of facility you can imagine. It was big. It was impressive. Number one, Ein Aniyut B'Mokom Ashirut. Why can't we bring back the reputation where there's Torah, there's a Beit HaMikdash, it's on a level. It doesn't have to be poverty. It doesn't have to be obscurity. It doesn't have to be like the church where you take a vow of poverty. You want to be a priest, a nun, you all know chastity, obedience, poverty. So they threw in Reb Meir Shapiro's face, Pirkei Avot, Pat B'Melech Tochal, Mayim B'Mishura. People, cynics, threw in his face. Gentlemen, let me tell you the Psat and the Mishnah. That's not the pshat. Pshat is very simple. In life, we don't know where we're going to be. I came in Aliyah 69. You have no idea how difficult those years were. 69, 70, we're still paying for the Six-Day War, the Yom Kippur War. Don't know what that did to us. Our salaries, taxed away. If you're on the books, I had no choice. There was so much black money here, you couldn't get anything done in your house unless you paid cash. Today, they're laws. Pay cash, they arrest you. They should. I know how hard life was. All right. Is that my choice? It can happen. Pas b'melech tolchal means if you're in such a position, you still have to learn Torah. Doesn't give you an excuse to be a batlan and say, how can I learn? I'm poor. I have to struggle. I don't have enough bread. I don't have enough water. I don't have... Pas b'melech tolchal. Eat a minimum. Drink a minimum. But don't give up Torah, and don't give up Torah learning, because without Torah learning, we disappear. And that's the pshat. Rav Meir Shapiro handled it very well. But it's not an ideal. It doesn't mean that pat b'melech tochal, that is the ideal. Chas v'chalila. More than that, Rav Meir Shapiro, you're opening yeshiva, he wanted a library. He said, my goal is to have the biggest Torah library in all of Poland. And here, I hope I can tell it to you without breaking down and crying, because it's unbelievable what I'm about to say. He went and collected Sfarim all over Poland. Now, what are we talking about? Again, Poland was changing. Rabbi Pinchas Mordechai Teitz had a meridik vort, used to say, and I apologize to him, because in my forthcoming major article, essay, publication, I differ with him. And I apologize. Das Teira caused a lot of harm to the Jewish people as a result of something that happened in the mid-80s, as you will read and understand the footnotes. But leave that for when the article comes out. Be a lot more from Jews in the world today, Haredi Jews as well. But, all right. Das Torah is a perversion of what Torah is all about. Rabbanim, there's halacha. But if someone asks me a shayla on cancer, I got to go to a doctor. I can't paskin. I have to go to a doctor. I have to get advice. Then I can give advice. And you'll see what I'm... Okay. So I apologize, because Rabbi Teitz was a great man. But on that incident, which involved all of B'nai Brak and the Mossad, Russian jury, and a guy named Darren Rakefet. You'll see and read, you'll understand what I'm talking about. It's not for now. But Rav Teitz used to say, what we are zeiche to in the United States, you come into a home, when I came to America, you came into a home and you found Sfarim, Shas, Paiskim. You could be sure that those Sfarim belonged to the grandfather. The children and grandchildren didn't give a hoot. Today you come into a home in America and you find Sfarim. Those Sfarim belong to the grandchildren. It's a meridik vot. Absolutely true. In Poland already in the 1920s, there was no need for Sfarim. Grandparents were dying, and the grandchildren were not interested. It's not modern, not science, not math. Not interested. He collected those Sfarim. When the library opened, it had over 20,000 Sfarim. The biggest rabbinic library in all of Poland. By the way, you can compare this Beit Medrash Gavoha, BMG in Lakewood. I was there, was honored by the heads of it right before Corona. And among other things, they showed me the library. I couldn't believe what I saw. Endless svarim, manuscripts, Kitvei Yad, people working there, publishing. I said to one of them, I saw what he published on Reb Chaim Hillel's letters. I said, they should shut down Bernard Rebbe Graduate School. You're on the level of any graduate. Here in Israel is the real problem. The universities have no talmidim in these departments today. Because the Hesde Yeshivot, in particular, Shalavim, the Gush, others as well, and even the classic Yeshivot, they've turned out Svarim, edited, the Maram Rutenberg, you see, a whole edited edition, all new. You see the Sfat Emet, I think it's from Karen Biafna, I saw an edited, I was born before my time. It's unbelievable. And they're turning out new. The universities, well, they don't have to go there. They're getting that ability from within, from studying, from our very Torah world today. Chochmat Yisrael has infiltrated, I'll use that word, the classic yeshivas, the Hesde Yeshiva. You follow me, the good. Remember my lectures on Wissenschaft des Judentum. The good in it is fabulous. Take the good. Forget about the Narishkeit. And this is Rav Meir Shapiro was so ahead of his time. Not only that, I'm going to end off with this, and again, I'm going to compare it to Lakewood. I was blown away what I saw in Lakewood. Rav Meir, not only that, had a mikveh, a big mikveh in the yeshiva. He had laundry room. Could you imagine the laundry done in the yeshiva? A lunchroom, dormitories, heat. You got to remember, indoor heating. Hot water. We take in Israel, show me one public place with hot water. Show me one house with hot water, 624. All right, I have during this, for most of the year, I have, because of the great inventions, the Dud Shemesh. I have burning water. Yesterday, too, with all the cloudiness, I took a shower, burning water. All right, the Israeli mind, what we've done with the Dvadei Shemesh, let me speak proper Hebrew. it's unbelievable. But what a level he had Chachmei Lublin on. All right, I want to end off on this high note. I don't want to end off with a tragedy. We'll begin next week with the tragedy, what happened to the yeshiva, what happened to the svarim. And it's like I told someone yesterday, you belong in Israel, your wife belongs in Israel, your parents belong in Israel. How can a Jew, after the Holocaust, live anywhere else? With all our problems here, with angels and the government, and you know, with all our problems. Baruch Hashem, we're here. And let me tell you, the progress we have made. When I came in Aliyah, if you stood on a street corner of Jerusalem, if one man out of 10 was wearing a kippah, you're doing okay. If one woman out of 20 was covering her hair, you're doing okay. Take a look where we're at today. I still remember going to Allenby's Cafe, whatever we had there, eating on the outside. It's all gone, it's all gone. And we were benching, or maybe we had falafel. And I remember Svatik walked by, it's like what I said in Shia a minute ago, and he looked at us and he laughed. You're actually benching during the week? Where we at today? And even the radio, they now have Arutz Bet, Reshet Bet, I should say, Arutz is television, Reshet Bet, which is the talk shows, every hour, around the hour, different people, and half of them have to be religious, have to be right-wingers. I drive home from Gruss, and I'm listening to the radio. I can't believe what I hear. It's like my own thoughts, there they are. And look at them. With all our difficulties, look how far we've come. And look at Hezda Yeshiva. Look at Haredi Hezda, organized by students of mine. Look what we have. And we're more progress and more progress. And Baruch Hashem, we have a president who Shem is Shabbos, all right? He's not where I would like him to be. Should put a kippah on. Doesn't realize that kippah would influence Jews around the world. You would make more people Jewish. Chief of staff, Shem is Shabbos. Also, he says he wears a kippah shkufah. That's his word, but he's a throw. He doesn't speak times a day. His kids are all 100%. His wife 100%. I know people who know him. And he's a Himmelfarb graduate from Beit Vagan. I have a grandson who graduated Himmelfarb. And we've made a lot of... So don't let anything depress us. There's a lot ahead of us. A lot more to be done. Mashiach isn't here yet. But we're paving the way. 150 trees lining the walk to Yachal. We've planted already at least 100 trees. All right, we have 50 more to go. B'ezrat Hashem. And you don't realize, you see, you influence one family to come in Aliyah. 50 years later, that one family, there are hundreds living al Admat HaKodesh from that family. I see pictures. My brother's family just had took everyone away for a Shabbat. So my Talmud, his nephew, his son, my nephew, my dentist, my Talmud, sent me a picture of the family. Unbelievable. We brought, Malka's brother was the first to go, 65. We came 69. My brother came 73. I will not tell you if direct descendants all living in Israel, Kanayin Hara. The base medrash downstairs is not big enough to hold us with all our descendants. Not big enough, by far. So this is the way Israel is built. And by the way, this is what I said last week. I didn't say one sentence that I should have said. See, this is why the secular world that only has progressive values, this is why they're suddenly frightened. Until now, it was theory. Haaretz ran a big article in 20 years, 50% of the country will be Shomer Shabbos, to lock us in our houses and tie us to our tables on Shabbos. We can't budge. But it was theory. The last election frightened them because it was tangible. And when they say, we have 64 and the leftists have what is left of the Knesset, 56. It's an absolute lie. We have 64 and they have 46. Don't count the Arabs, please. They're not part of the leftists. They have their own agenda. And even among who they have, plenty of kippot, unfortunately. You know, people think differently. Chili Trapa, raised in a home, his parents are tzaddikei yesod olam. Danny and Fagi Trapper? Who are we talking about? Oh, Chili Trapper's with guns, with the kippah. Gans are surrounded by women who are wearing shekels. Go and explain it. So Munkatcha Chassid Gans. All his relatives who survived are Satmar in America. You follow? So it became Muhashi. Tangible. Oh my. Haaretz wrote, this may happen. It's happening before our eyes. Not 30 years. Now. And of course, if you're worried they're going to tie you to a bed on Shabbos, or to a chair and not let you budge. Oh my gosh, they're frightened. I wish I could get the message across. My dear friends, my brethren, you are free to choose whatever you want on a private level. You can eat all the chazer in the world on Shabbos Cholamei Pesach on bread, heat it up in a microwave on Shabbos, do whatever you want. We are not watching. It's not our responsibility. The Ribbono Shel Olam is watching. You believe, you don't believe. Well, it's your choice. Uvachata b'chayim. That's what religion is all about. My dear students, I need modela kadosh baruch hu. I haven't had such crowds in front of me since Corona began. And such intelligent people. Wow. And on the screen, wow, rabbanim, chassidic rabbeim, professors, wow, we're doctor, we're not lacking anyone. And then it goes all over the world, yutorah.org and Kanayin Hara. For a little kid from the Bronx who knows Joe DiMaggio's statistics by heart until today, we're not doing too bad. I have a lot to say on Joe DiMaggio, Chaim. He only trusted Jews. And yours truly became very close to the Jew he trusted the most. And through him, I will not let anyone criticize Chabad. You know what I'm talking about? Well, you got to go back and listen to the Shiurim. But, wow, what a story. Yes, Ben.
In the Das Torah world, the response to your argument about going to a doctor is they will point, for example, to the Chazon Ish, who is said would draw pictures of the brain and tell surgeons how to do brain surgery.
Yeah, all that is true, but he had to learn it. He knew what he was doing. But when you get involved with an issue of to demonstrate and not demonstrate, and you don't know what the heck is going on in the world, the Mossad knew 1 million times more than you at that moment in time. And you're dealing with the Mossad that was against demonstrations for many years. But he knew. And the guy who got the award first, what's his name, who deals with doctors here, the man is self-taught, fine. But that's not Das Torah. Look what the Mori Rebbe Paskin. Look what Reb Moshe Feinstein. Look what happened in this classroom with Yosef Atzadik Mendelovich. I cite our interchange. I added a footnote. But wow, Das Torah. You bother a Rebbe? Should I buy a blue car or a brown car? Read what I have from the Baal Tanya and from Rav Avadya's daughter. But. A blue or brown car doesn't bother me, but when Jews could have been made from, and you stopped it, wow. My own embarrassment, what I went through in the Mossad, I mean, these are people who give their lives 24-7 to Am Yisrael. These are not politicians. You don't see politicians in the Mossad. And go and explain, they looked at me, what is, are they crazy? And then, right afterwards, you had 250,000 people demonstrating in Washington, D.C. Gorbachev, that was the end of their opposition to Aliyah. It's an amazing thing. We brought it down. Yes, there were times where the demonstration could have harmed. The Lubavitcher Rebbe also was guilty of not shifting gears. There was a time not to demonstrate, and a time too. But anyway, I'll end off with one thought. My humble opinion, that's why the Rav became a Mizrachiite. He saw that 1943 march and how FDR spat in the face of the Jews, let them be killed. Shtadlanit doesn't work. Again, I don't say it forever. You have to judge, be an expert. All right. I proved my point very solidly. I challenge anyone to prove me wrong. Look at the Pinchas Hirschsprung. Look at the sources I cite. Look what I cited in the Herzl article. I got to figure out now how to publicize that article. I'd like to print up 10,000 copies, hire a helicopter to fly over B'nai Brak, and let the copies drop from the air. but we need it in Hebrew translation. I'm not there yet. Let me just say, are there any more questions from the area that people sitting in front of me? Morty, will you please come up and open up the air to the people who have struggled with me for an hour and 45 minutes. Okay, until we meet again in health and happiness, das vidanya.
Where's the cursor?
End this as ending.
You know? Yeah, I'll just... Where'd it go?
Yomo is not in the room, so I'm asking Morty to open it up. It's not always that you have an entire atomic scientist dealing with the Rebbe's screen and recording. Unmute them. Okay. That's it? They're unmuted?
Yeah. Whoever wants to.
Does anyone have a comment to make from around the world?
Rebbe, I just wanted to say, a number of years ago, many years ago, the YU Museum had an exhibit, because what you said about the flag with the Yisachar Zvulun.
Right.
So they had an exhibit on the printing of the Gemara. I think it was when the Schottenstein was finished. They had a whole exhibit there.
Right. I have the book they put out.
Right. They had a catalog. So they had this opening event. Professor Elman spoke. So it was about the Gemara. You know, he spoke about that. But then I saw they had another event. So I called them up. I said, can I come? She was like, want to come to that? All right, sure, why not? So I came. It turned out it was the Elman spoke about learning. The night before, it was for all the donors of the museum. And I remember they had Rabbi Lamb's book, but Rabbi Steinsaltz gave the main speech. And he gave a speech. It was very subtle. I had to realize what he was doing, but it was very subtle. It was about how people who contribute also have a schar in learning, you know, have a share in learning. And it was like, you could tell he was talking. He knew exactly who he was talking to.
Yes, Yisachar Zvulun.
Yisachar Zvulun, yeah.
Exactly. So I can tell you that I once spoke at the Lamb, I think. I'm hearing an echo. I once spoke at an event for women only. It may have been in President Lamb's wife's home or some other very wealthy women. And they asked me to speak on the Gerer Rebbe. And there were relatives there, big fans of mine who have heard me, but very well-to-do. And I understood that event was not just to publicize that some YU dummy knows something about the Gerer Rebbe, but it was to show that YU honors the Gerer Rebbe's memory and the present Gerer Rebbe, but the Untas the Shura is help support YU. Now, I'll tell you something interesting, which you got to understand Ger to appreciate. So, there was a great niece of the Gerer Rebbe with her mother, very important people. The mother, no longer alive, many years, a dear friend of ours. And her daughter said to me afterwards, why didn't you speak about the chumras of Ger in relation to Tarat Mishpacha, man, husband and wife relations? As I told her, you got to know who your audience is. If I was speaking in the classroom in Gris, I would go into it. You got to be honest and talk about the totality of Ger. But I said, with these women on the Upper West Side or the Upper East Side, I forget already where it was, I think I was smart to leave it out. I don't know if she totally understood me because she was a Gerer Beishakov graduate. So today, maybe 20 years later, she has broadened. But then, at least, I gave her an answer. All right, but Yasher Koyach on what you said. Listen, that's life. We can have all the great ideas in the world. One Talmud said, Rakofet Aaron Chelik Aleph Chelik Bet is missing. I'm reprinting it. You follow me? Without that, and people are happy. I say that, do you want? I said, I can't ask for money. Originally, we thought we'd raise money. I'd do good things with it. In America, they'll ask for money. I can't. It's not within me. There are reasons why. From the first Rabbinate in Philadelphia in 1961, believe me, from that point on, I understood if I'm going to be a good Jew, I cannot touch money, period. So I can't, but I see people are so happy. And then I look at Rakov and Chelik Aleph Chelik Bet, wow, this is Shavuot L'chol Nefesh. You can be Haredi, you can be Tzini Dati. There's terrific material there. So we need the Yisachar. Without Zvulun, he can't get off the ground. He remains grounded. And that was Reb Meir Shapira. I'll tell you, all my life I heard about him, and I always felt this man deserves much more credit in the total Torah world. And I nimadah l'Kadosh Baruch Hu that at least we're bringing him back to life. Okay, are there any other questions? We have to clear the class from this soon. Another class here until we meet again in health and happiness. Das Vidanya. Thank you. Nachem, regards to your parents.